So round two, Micheál Martin, Donald Trump in the Oval Office once again, a 50-minute standoff. How did the Taoiseach do? Well, we're going to cross to Washington now and find out. Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
If you stop waffling, we might get some work done. You're a waffler. You've been years around here waffling.
God knows we have some All-Ireland champions here in Castlebar. I don't mean Castlebar Mitchells. I mean the whingers that I hear every week.
It's as though he found the entrance into Narnia and only pops back through the wardrobe every now and then to remind us of just how incompetent he is.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe. Thanks a million for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever it is you're listening. And you will have heard this podcast come to you from Washington and come from to you from the States over many years when these big trips are on. And this year it is our reporter, Jamie O'Hara, who is over in Washington, D.C., getting up in the middle of the night, early hours of the morning to talk to us because, of course, the annual Paddy's Day trip, Micheál Martin went into that bear pit that was the Oval Office. And Jamie, just looking, I mean, like, you heard all the headlines in advance anyway of, God, this could be a mauling and what if he sets him up, and we've seen what Donald Trump has done to world leaders. And then you look at the headlines this morning, certainly over here, most of them, you know, Micheál Martin survived, he got through, he placated all the way to, on the far end of the spectrum, capitulation to Donald Trump and, you know, kowtowing to a warmonger. You were in the room for all of the major events and that 50-minute-ish Oval Office. Taking the 10,000-foot view, what's your headline for how it went?
I think the Department of Foreign Affairs, the government and the Department of the Taoiseach are going to put this down as a success. Saturday, Sunday in Philadelphia, very successful series of engagements. I mean, Micheál Martin was playing to a home crowd there, really. So then the talk was about what was going to happen in the Oval. Now, I've seen criticism that Micheál Martin allowed Donald Trump to basically say the President of Ireland was a man in one of his answers when he was asked about Catherine Connolly's comments on the conflict in the Middle East and it being against international law.
Who said that?
The Irish president.
Look, he's lucky I exist. That's all I can say. Because if you're going to allow countries that are sick and demented, and they are demented, to have nuclear weapons, everybody in the whole world should be very thankful. And I'm disappointed in NATO, very disappointed. I'm disappointed in a couple of other countries, too.
Micheál Martin did not correct him. Now, that could have been for, you know, a myriad of reasons. He probably did hear him because we heard it. And actually, I was listening back to one of my clips earlier, and you can hear a journalist whispering, "She's a woman." But I think overall, I think it was successful. And how I would give that a 10,000 foot view of why it's successful is Donald Trump, in his speeches yesterday, especially at the Shamrock Bowl, which is, as you know, it's the very, very final, it's the very final event. Donald Trump mentioned Stephen Moylan, who was the first person, he's from Cork, he was the first person to coin the phrase in writing, the United States of America in 1776. Donald Trump said that 23 presidents of the United States of America have, you know, are descended of Irish blood. He did note the employment links, the trade links, the cultural links. He even said something along the lines of, "I think I even have a little Irish blood in me." And then he spoke about being of Scottish descent just for a second. But I mean, all those things were speeches that Micheál Martin has been making the previous 3 days and even that day. So Trump and the US administration, they were listening, they were absorbing. And I think it was net positive.
Yeah, I wonder, they're obviously listening. I do wonder how much they're absorbing, because people were going on about the Catherine Connolly comments, wondering it would be a big thing. Donald Trump clearly hasn't a clue who Catherine Connolly is, let alone what she said. And which I was surprised at, because I assumed officials would have done some briefing. Maybe they did. But even things like the trade deficit that he talks about on goods, this $40 billion deficit that he brought up, which doesn't take into account services, obviously. But it almost seemed to surprise him when he was saying it, as if he was reading this fact going, oh my God, even though he's spoken about the $40 billion deficit last year and many years before. I do wonder, and particularly this year, having, because obviously I've been in the White House before and done this trip that you're on in previous years, and it's interesting to watch it from the remove of home this year. I wonder how much he actually takes in and how much his briefing notes he reads that morning and sort of forgets it goes out of his mind for the rest of the year.
On that Shamrock Bowl announcement, that speech that he gave, he basically said something along the lines of, "Oh, I'm just seeing now," or "when I look down at the footnote that it's $42 billion," and then he called off the stage to one of his secretaries, one of his ministers, basically, "You know, are we going to do something about this?" And the guy shouts back, "Tomorrow."
U.S. Trade Representative Jamieson Greer, Jamieson, we have a $40 billion deficit with Ireland. $40 billion. We got to do something about. Where's Jamieson? Okay, please. I'm looking at the little notes, and I'm looking, you know, Bob, Bob, Bob. I'm hearing all of the accomplishments of your great leader, but then I saw the deficit is $42 billion. So they're going to have to buy a lot of our energy, I think. Okay, to make up with that
tomorrow. You know, basically to stall him. But then Micheál Martin then came back by saying he would like free trade with the United States, obviously a nod to all Trump's tariffs that were, you know, unpredictably, you know, they were just slapped on kind of in April last year. He also mentioned, it was an interesting fact, he said that with all of the orders for Boeing 737 aircraft by Irish companies, it would keep the Boeing company going for a year just fulfilling Irish orders.
Irish companies have so many 737s on order that it would take the Boeing factory in Washington almost an entire year of working solely on Irish orders to deliver them all. It's true. Every day, hundreds of thousands of American men and women go to work in hundreds of Irish-owned companies across the 50 states of the Union. Irish investment is central to making the critical materials for American infrastructure and housing, the food that is served on American tables each night using produce from American farmers, the infrastructure that powers the AI revolution. The United States is the largest economy in the world. Ireland is small. We need free and open trade to make our way in the world. And we like to see as few barriers and tariffs get in the way of that as possible.
So, I mean, Donald Trump has to pay attention to things like that. He also has to realize that the United States has, you know, 340 million people versus 5.5 or 5.6 million people. How many people do we have? And that there is just going to be a slight trade deficit between a country the size of a continent and a country the size of Ireland.
And he seemed thoroughly amused by the idea that there are far more Irish people in the United States or people of Irish descent than there is in Ireland. He mentioned it a number of times yesterday. So in the room, bring us in then, because when you go into the Oval Office and what people don't see off camera is the massive squeeze as you move from the press room through this narrow corridor and past what was the Rose Garden. I don't know what he's done with it now. In and the American press, you're getting your elbows up trying to get in. What was that mood like when everyone first sat down and, you know, Micheál Martin sitting there, his advisors are off to one side, Donald Trump sitting with Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance on the other?
Just to answer your one of your points there, the Rose Garden has just been concreted over. And as we were waiting to go in, I had looked across and it says the Rose Garden up on one of the walls, and I couldn't see any roses. But I think I'm not sure. Like, Micheál Martin seemed comfortable. I'm sure there was some apprehension where he was thinking, maybe, you know, what am I about to go through? But I think, do you know what it was, Sean? I think the war in Iran took an awful lot of heat off Micheál Martin, and it took an awful lot of heat off Ireland Inc. Actually, would be a better way of saying it, in terms of the pharmaceutical companies that we have, and Apple's European headquarters, and Meta, and Alphabet, and those companies were just not on Donald Trump's radar. And I think I was unsure how it was going to go until we went to the vice president's residence yesterday morning, and J.D. Vance was very, very happy to talk about Ireland, his love for Ireland, that he had gone there with his wife, that one of his best friends is like second or third generation Irish or whatever. He's an Irish American. It was a very, very warm welcome. And I was thinking,
did he have the shamrock socks on again?
He did. He pointed to his socks. He was talking about, was it Donegal wool socks or something? I'd have to go back and watch the video again. But yeah, he did point down to his socks, and there was a bit of a laugh about that. But it was all very friendly. Like, I mean, realistically, the only things that Donald Trump was very critical on were Europe as a whole in terms of immigration, and I suppose how the bloc runs itself. And what was the other one? It was...
he talked a lot about Iran. He talked about trade deficits. I suppose they're the kind of the major points that you're getting in. I can tell you've got 5 a.m. brain, and the fact that you that day takes like 27 hours into 24. But yes. Just to pick up on the Europe point, because he criticized Europe last year and Micheál Martin said nothing. He criticized Europe this year and Micheál Martin said nothing. But I couldn't quite see on the camera, was he trying to interject? Because there were one or two times you could see Micheál Martin's fingers come into the shot, and then he's just utterly drowned out by journalists trying to ask questions. Do you think he was trying to get a few more points in than the, probably what, realistically he spoke for maybe 6 of the 50 minutes?
I'm just trying to think now. I think he did address the issue. I would have to get the clip to have a listen back.
We can actually hear some of it now, because he said about Europe, it's still a decent place to live.
Excuse me.
First of all, I would say, like, Europe is still a very good place to live in.
Good.
Just to let you know.
I'm glad to hear it.
and our view is you have to have robust and fair rules around migration. But on the other hand, a lot of people, you know, within the European Union, we have free mobility of people. And in Ireland, our population is growing, but in a very positive way. Our economy is going well because we're attracting a lot of people from Europe and beyond into work, legally and validly, in our country. In fact, I'd love if we could develop a legal pathway between the US and Ireland into the future, because of our history and so on like that, mm-hmm. that we could have a legal pathway, because no one is in favour of illegal migration or and so forth. So you have to have robust rules for that. But fundamentally, I think sometimes Europe gets characterised wrongly in terms of it being overrun or whatever like that. It's much more robust now. There's much more stronger mechanism in place to facilitate legal migration. I think it's important that understanding is there. We need more economic growth in Europe. It doesn't have the same focus on innovation as you do here in the US. Discussed that earlier with the Vice President in terms of technology, in terms of AI. We need to pivot more to innovation as opposed to regulation. I think investing in people, you know, and that's the key to, I think, our collective future.
And then as well, I felt he was much stronger butting in about Keir Starmer rather than necessarily Europe, because, you know, I mean, Donald Trump said all sorts of things about Europe in the past, and obviously Micheál Martin met Keir Starmer in Cork only last week, that he was much stronger in defending our UK friends than necessarily our friends in Brussels.
Yeah, he did. Donald Trump, he pointed to a bust, a brass bust in the White House, and he asked some of the journalists, you know, do you know who that is? And it was Winston Churchill. And he said, Keir Starmer is not Winston Churchill. So
understatement of the century, in fairness to Keir Starmer. But anyway, go on.
You know, but he, Micheál Martin, so he's obviously not happy that the Royal Navy would not be accompanying him to the Strait of Hormuz with their destroyers. And I think that's why he is annoyed. And we know how Donald Trump can, you know, he loves you one day and he doesn't another day, depending on how you respond to his requests. But Micheál Martin was actually quite strong on Keir Starmer, and he described him as sound, which actually, while we would know exactly what that means, I don't know if the Americans would fully know what it means. I don't know if all of the English would fully know what it means. But he did describe him as sound. And he also kind of half appealed to Trump to kind of make amends by saying, you know, you have had a good relationship with him. It is in your ability to have a good relationship with him again. And from my memory of it, from the videos and from like looking over shoulders, as far as I know, Trump kind of, he did listen and he was nodding. Whether or not he would actually take that on board is another thing.
Yeah. As you mentioned earlier, look, an awful lot of the focus on Iran and everything happening there, and Donald Trump criticizing NATO as well as Keir Starmer for not getting involved. Here's some of what he had to say about why he was so involved in Iran. And he was also asked then, Jamie, so that question that, you know, no one lives in a bubble, and that Donald Trump, what did he have to say to Irish people who are facing massive fuel increases because of his war, essentially?
He said, in terms of the war in Iran, he said it's going to be over soon. He described it as a little excursion. He was talking about Ireland, the links between Ireland and America, and America 250 years. And he just, as he does, he just said, OK, and if I can just talk about this for a second. And he moved on to that.
Well, I think the people in Ireland are very happy that I'm getting rid of. I have a lot of friends from Ireland. They're very happy that I'm getting rid of a nuclear power, a nuclear terrorist. And as soon as that war is over, which will be soon, your prices are going to drop like a rock. You watch.
And then he started talking about his friends. He said, I have friends in Ireland and my friends are, you know, they're very happy that what I'm doing in Iran. So while he did, you know, he kind of half answered the question, really. It was asked straight out, what would you like? One of the journalists said, what would you like to say to the people in Ireland who are facing sky high fuel bills? And he said just that it's going to come down really soon. He hopes to have this all done and dusted within a few weeks. That's what he said anyway.
Mm. What did you make then personally of the pageantry of the day, of the sort of access? Because it is like it maybe looks, and people, I suppose, because it's on a bank holiday at home, you see the package on the news, maybe you watch the press conference, but there's a whole other side to it, an awful lot of hanging around. But being in the vice president's residence, the Naval Observatory, then into the White House, and you're sort of rushed into that Oval Office and then to Capitol Hill. There's an awful lot to take. Did you enjoy it, I guess, is one way that I'm asking. But also, did you sort of appreciate, I guess, the history of it? Or do you think maybe it's just, look, it's a bit of pageantry. It's them having a nice Paddy's Day and welcoming the old Irish before they get back to business.
I did enjoy it, Sean. And I think something you had said to me before I went was that while you're in the Oval Office, and it's a very surreal experience to be in the Oval and to see Donald Trump in the flesh and to hear his quips in the flesh and the way he can just go on a 15-minute riff. But you had said to me, take a look around. So I actually did. I did take a look around. I looked at the ceiling. I looked at the walls. I actually didn't see the desk. There was too many people in there. I couldn't see the desk.
No one ever sees the desk. Yep. It's so you. Last time I was there, I had to actively like given out to by one of his press people for hanging around to try and find the desk because it looks way bigger on telly.
Yeah. The room itself is quite small and it was very cramped yesterday. Space was at a premium. And then immediately when it's done, you're rushed out. They say, thank you, press, thank you, press, thank you, press. They keep repeating it as they're basically walking you out.
And you're doing them a service there, by the way, with the tone that you're using. It is much less friendly than thank you, press. It's thank you, press in a get the F out of this room.
Yeah, absolutely. Out as quickly as possible, and then you're rushed. So we all went then on a minibus and we went to the Capitol building, a beautiful building. And when we went in there, there was the luncheon and they gave speeches. But when we came back out, we were in this kind of we were in this round atrium, and it was just a really gorgeous ornate building. And afterwards I was sitting, I was filing, I had my laptop on my knees and I was really rushing to get stuff done. And when I stood up, as I was getting one of my, I think it was my bag that I use for work, I saw this plaque on the ground directly beneath my seat. And it said that Abraham Lincoln, senator for Illinois, that's where the location of his desk was. Wow. In the building. So I just thought that was really cool. And it was a nice moment to just kind of just reflect on history and reflect on being in DC. You know, these trips are... there are a lot of hard work, and sometimes it's easy to just get caught up in the, oh, I have to write these many stories and I have to talk to this radio station at 3 o'clock in the morning my time. But it is nice to actually take a look around. So yeah, I did appreciate it. I think I'm probably too fatigued to fully to fully take it all in now, but in a couple of days' time it'll really probably hit me when I get back to Cork.
You and the Taoiseach both when you get back to Cork. Of course, you can't train it out of you. Well, look, Jamie O'Hara, thank you so much for joining us from Washington, D.C. and for getting up at that ungodly hour. I know the hotel you're staying in. I know they have a fabulous breakfast. So go and enjoy that. Get a bit of sleep. Thanks for all your coverage on News Talk. People can check it out on newstalk.com, on our social medias, on this podcast, and of course the podcast of the various shows that Jamie has been on. That's it for this episode of Let Me Explain. We're going to be back with another one before the end of the week. But for now, I suppose, happy St. Patrick's Day to you, to Jamie O'Hara, to everybody listening. Thanks a million.